the XXXXXXX Files.
Exploring feminism and technology through space and time.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You are listening to the XX Files on CKUT and 90.3 FM. It's 11:33, April 18th.
18th already.
Or January 200th. And we are live in the studio today with the guest Annie Go.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So Annie is an artist, researcher, and musician working primarily with sound, space, electronic media, and generative processes.
It's always funny when someone reads out your bio.
No kidding.
Did we get it right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Is it true?
Yeah, that's what it says. Yeah.
And Annie is the current resident at Studio XX right now.
Yeah.
So perhaps you can start by introducing yourself and your practice?
Sure. So on my bio, it always says that I'm an artist and researcher. I guess I work mainly with sound, so both in my art practice, which includes room installations and performances and compositions and that sort of thing. And then as a researcher, I'm writing a PhD on acoustic archaeology and sonic knowledge production at Goldsmiths University in London. Wow. So I'm doing art and theory at the same time. So that's kind of my practice.
Amazing.
And how far along are you into your PhD?
Oh, like much further than I am than I feel like I'm not. never far enough. But yeah, I've got about a year and a half left to write up and lots to do still. So yeah.
Awesome. Amazing.
Yeah.
And so you're working here at Studio XX on a project called Gendy Trouble Cyber Feminist Computer Music.
Yes.
And can you tell us about what you're researching or creating during your time here in Montreal?
Sure. Maybe it helps to go back a bit because... Sure. So I started that project, I think, in 2015, which was meant as like a multi-channel sound performance. I was invited to a festival in Chicago called Sexing Sound about gender in electronic music or gender in music and sound art and that sort of thing. And yeah, so I conceived of this project, and Gendy Trouble is a play on words. So it's kind of merging two kind of very different figures and concepts. So on the one hand, Yannis Xenakis, who's this like super serious Greek composer like of the second half of the 20th century, who did a lot of stuff with computer music, but also other compositions with real instruments. And he had this principle of Gendy or Gendine, which stands for, excuse my French, Génération Dynamique Stochastique. So it's like a stochastic generative principle of waveform synthesis. And the idea of that was to create like very unnatural, rich and strange sounds through like digital waveform generation. So that's like on the one hand, so that's the Gendy part. And then Gendy Trouble is obviously a reference to Judith Butler's Gender Trouble. And I guess it kind of just came around when I was coding the sounds, and then you need a name for the sounds. And then I was like using the Gendy object in the programming language that I tried to work with called SuperCollider, and then you need to give it a name. So I was like, Gendy Trouble. And then I was just like, oh, what happens when you think that through a bit more? And with Judith Butler's like Gender Trouble and like this idea of performativity, it's this like idea of like iterations of like performances and actions that give us our gender. Like it's, you know, obviously it's not attached to like a fixed essence, but it comes through that everyday performance and that iteration of the performance of gender. And I guess I was trying to think through what happens if you think that through sonically and like as something that you're always generating, and can that be emancipatory? Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Amazing. So the end piece is a performance or a multi-channel installation?
Good question. I think I would like to get it fixed as recordings, actually. So it already was a performance. I don't know. I guess it would be nice if it could be several things all at once. So, yeah, a fixed recording and then also perform it on, like, different setups. And for it to be flexible would be good. So, yeah, it doesn't have to be multi-channel. There's all this, like, excitement, especially in the very serious genre of computer music. And it's all, like, how many channels and, like, ambisonic and wavefield synthesis. And it's, like, very, like, tech-focused. And I guess part of the reason of... Or what I thought would be quite provocative was to, like, bring gender studies into this, like, this kind of field and, like, see what happens, which wasn't actually as provocative as I thought it would be in retrospect, but it is still a little bit of a kind of disconnect in those like centers, those very serious, like, university centers with, like, multi-channel sound. So yeah, I don't know, I'm keeping it open, I suppose.
Okay, amazing.
And can you talk a little bit about the intersection of generative art and gender theory or computer music as well?
Yeah, I guess that was just like to do with the play on words and like the root of the word, like gen, that it shares both in generative art and gender studies and gender and genre. And like, yeah, I guess thinking about how it means like genus, like a category or like a type of thing. And then that also has come to be like what we call gender, and in terms of like sexual difference, and I don't know, I think it's just kind of fun to think about the etymology of those words.
For sure.
Yeah,
it's it's interesting to think about it in this like generative way, because I think also like Judith Butler would say things are reified, so kind of like through this like the continuation of something, or like however many times something happens, it becomes more and more real. So that way gender is also generative also.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's kind of like the direction that I was thinking in when I first conceived it, but at the same time I was always a bit skeptical of it, because there's many things that are more reified in power structures that are unmovable. So it's kind of like perhaps this could be like a little flicker of emancipation in this very tiny instance, but actually, like, yeah, all the other good old power structures are still there predominantly.
For sure.
So I guess it was kind of done in a slightly tongue-in-cheek way as well.
Cool. And so what is like what stage are you at in this research or production that you're kind of working, like what are you doing in the studio?
Good question. I've been just kind of tearing my hair out with technical problems, because I'm really into this programming language of SuperCollider. It's very powerful and it's open source, it's free, and there's a community, and it's like it does amazing things and you can do amazing things with it. When I first got to know it, I was like, wow, this is so amazing. But it's so difficult, and especially if you don't have a programming background, so it's just like me staring at error messages and googling like for help in the hope that someone previously had the same problem. And yeah, so that's been a fair amount of the time. And the other part has been like reading. So I reread Sadie Plant's Zeros and Ones, which is this like key cyberfeminist text from the mid-90s. I've been like going back and listening to kind of those rediscovered women electronic music composers in the past few weeks as well. So what we're listening to now is Elsa Marie Pader,
yep. Mm-hmm.
Who was a Danish electronic music composer who passed away a few years ago, and her work only got kind of discovered by the international community at least a few years prior to that, and there was a re-release of her compositions, and they're just so beautiful and so amazing. So I was just really enjoying listening to these. So this, I think this one was from 1958, and this was the first ever Danish produced or Danish electronic music piece, full stop, not just by a woman. and then she produced all this really incredibly beautiful stuff in the 60s. Some of it was, you know, commissions for I guess plays and theater stuff.
Who else have you been listening to?
St- stuff from the UK, I guess, like Delia Derbyshire and Daphne Oram, yeah. And that's kind of coincided with the research that I'm doing whilst I'm here. So I've been a researcher at McGill, working with Professor Jonathan Stern, and some of that research has been for his book, like looking for women electronic music composers using this one specific like nerdy tape device from the 1950s, which is super interesting.
Cool.
He's awesome.
Oh, you know him too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a device about like speeding up and slowing down sound and like changing pitch and time independent of one another, which one thinks came about in the digital domain, but actually it has a history that goes back to like the mid 1950s and analog tapes and stuff.
Amazing.
So, yeah, it's neat.
Cool. Okay.
We also, didn't mean to cut you off there. We noticed that you're the co-founder of the Sonic Cyber Feminisms Project.
Yes.
And we were hoping you could talk a little bit about that and kind of your definition of Sonic Cyber Feminisms.
Yeah, it's like one of those things that's really hard to define, I suppose. But it emerged from like these debates around 2013-14, when the Female Pressure Network, who I'm sure you know, published these a load of statistics about like how many women and men are booked at music festivals and are kind of released by labels, and there was obviously this huge kind of disparity, and then there was a big debate around that, and there was a lot of difficult kind of conversations had. I know at the time I was working for a festival in Berlin called CTM Festival, and in response to that, so as with all the other festivals, there was kind of like, I don't know, 5-10% or definitely under 15% of like women identified participants at the festival that were counted. So I did a panel there, and we invited Sadie Plant actually, and she actually like came, and it was cool. Susanna Kirchmeier, who's the founder of Female Pressure, Fender Schrader, who's an amazing transgender identified engineer and artist, and then Marie Thompson, who I then like later started doing the Sonic Cyber Feminisms Project with, who's a researcher and also a sound practitioner. So we had this conversation, how can we kind of think about like why it is that there's so few women identified people, or actually this has changed substantially in the past few years, but at the time it was very like the kind of disparity was very clear, why it is that there's so few women, let's say, represented at music festivals. And also like not just that, like it's not just about like making a quota and then getting 50-50 and then like patting ourselves on the back that we're like really enlightened. I think that is just representative or symbolic of many other problems which like run very deep. So the idea of drawing on like cyberfeminism was like, okay, these discussions were being had in the 90s and the 2000s, and they were actually in, especially the North American side, very intersectional. So they were talking about race, and they were talking about sexuality and class in ways that were super productive, and a lot of that kind of got a bit forgotten. So now we're in a bit of a revival of cyberfeminism. Some people are calling it post-cyberfeminism, which is quite apt probably. And the Sonic Cyber Feminisms Project is, I suppose, thinking about how what sound can do for that in many ways. So not only looking at like gendered inequalities in audio production and sound art and electronic music, but also kind of like how what the sonic means in a broader sense. Sorry if that sounds a bit esoteric, but I suppose. In the sense that like, yeah, sound can be considered a very powerful force. So it's like, how can we use this? Not to say that it's like automatically like a magic sprinkling of like some magical powder that's going to correct everything, but there are certain affordances. You know, radio is an amazing example of like community building.
For sure.
And like, yeah, thinking through the sonic in different ways and how that can be used for like, yeah, emancipatory means.
Amazing.
We definitely
We identify with all of that.
Yeah,
for sure.
We think cool. about that a lot.
And this show actually has been on since 1996. We have not been hosting it for that long, but the prior host Valerie Walker actually how she would go to MuTech every year before in the 90s and the early 2000s before they had a single woman on the bill, and was just like, go to every single conference and be like, excuse me, I'd like to, for us to talk about why there are no women on your programming.
Oh, why? Yeah.
So, and now I don't, like, there's this initiative where they're kind of like, all of these music festivals have said within 5 years they're going to have, gender parity. I wonder what your thoughts are on that, or the process that's going into this.
It's I think it's great. So CTM Festival, who I work for, have really turned things around since then. And the past 2 or maybe even 3 years, they've got very close to 50%, and it's been a lot more diverse because it really made them sit up and think about their curatorial process. And a lot of it is obviously friends and friends of friends, and so-and-so's got a new project, and then it just happens to be that, like, you know, 95% of the lineup is white men. And so it forced them to really think about that, and they've put in a lot of effort to diversify, and it's worked really well, and the program's become really strong because the arguments at the time were like, you know, we care about the music and we don't want, like, you know, we have to provide a good program for the audience. And it's like, it has not compromised that at all. It's probably just made it even better. The past few years have been amazing. At the same time, I really encourage those campaigns, and it makes it a lot more enjoyable as a visitor to those festivals when you don't just see white men on stage, straight white men. But at the same time, yeah, it's still the same thing. It's not just about that, you know. It's like so many more debates which are like part of that I think it's important not to lose sight of those. It's like, yeah.
Totally. Like, think about curatorial practice in a more holistic sense.
And intersectional.
Yeah, exactly.
And so what are some of your reflections or even aspirations for this kind of post-cyber feminism
moment?
Moment, yeah.
My aspirations. I suppose something I've been thinking about a lot is how these things are never, like, in and of themselves emancipatory. So some strands of cyberfeminism or post-cyberfeminism have been, like, really, like, pro-technology to be, like, anti-nature, and be, like, bad feminism is, like, essentialist and naturalistic. And I think that can be a bit of an oversight, because that also overlooks, like, a lot of amazing feminist work that has not been essentialist and not naturalistic. So sometimes it's a bit unfair to kind of be like pro technology as if that's in and of itself emancipatory. And I think this always needs to kind of come with like a politics that is grounded in like anti-racism and like critiques of capitalism and white supremacy and ableism and transphobia and homophobia. And I think all those things need to come together and not just kind of depict it, like sound even or technology or any of these things, as a kind of magic solution for these problems which are deeply ingrained in society in multifaceted ways.
And do you see parallels between technological advancement and feminism?
I think I would say, I think I would say a similar thing. Like, it's not like that one, that they have some kind of relationship that needs to be excavated. I just think, amongst this kind of complex intermixing of issues, that there can and should be feminist agendas in technology, and these need to be constantly revised and updated for the new kind of challenges which are always emerging. I think obviously it's not helpful to hold on to any kind of stubborn anti-technologist views. I don't think that's going to like help progress feminist agendas. But at the same time, same point as before, really, just that these are kind of grounded in like lived experiences that can't be overlooked when thinking about these things.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So how do you, in terms of sound specifically, so how would you say our bodies as kind of gendered, implicated in, or otherwise implicated in sound specifically? What is the role of the sonic here, or the potential for the sonic?
I guess just like loads of different ways that are kind of too many to name. But often I find, for example, Marie Thompson, who I do the Sonic Cyberfeminisms project with, mm-hmm. she's done a lot of work on noise. And I mean, a lot of scholars have been working on this topic of noise, but I think the thing that comes out in her work, which is very like amazing, by the way, highly recommended, and politicized, is like who is considered noisy. So in a given situation, which people or which things and which ideas and which actions are considered noisy, and how is that often related to like unruly, unwanted, primitive perhaps, or like irrational. And it's almost like lots of these things are quite subtly interwoven in our everyday like language even, and also in general kind of characterizations that we have of social groups. So this emerges, I can't remember what the question was. In the voice, like I guess in loads of different ways. I think you can't really separate them, which is why it's always a difficult question to answer. It's like everywhere.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're coming up to the end of the hour.
Oh, wow, we talked for a long time.
I know, it goes by so quick. Do you have anything coming up? Are you doing anything like a presentation at Studio XX during your residency, or?
I'm not doing a public thing at Studio XX actually, but I'm gonna do a little gig at the end of the month on the last Sunday, which is at Noise Sundays at La Plante.
Oh, great!
Yeah, which is I think Sunday the 29th from 3 o'clock, because it's an afternoon thing. So that's a little thing. And then apart from that, I'm just working on the Sonic Cyberfeminisms project with Marie Thompson, and we're going to do a residency at Weissing Arts Centre, which is near Cambridge in the UK, later this year with a big group of us and lots of good comrades there. So that's like about it, I suppose. There's probably more stuff, but I just can't remember.
Cool. And how can people get involved in the Sonic Cyberfeminisms
not easy
project?
We have a mailing list which anyone who's interested can join. It's not super active because there's loads of different mailing lists that like do various different things anyway, but we have our own little one, and so anyone can join that. I think it's like group Sonic Cyberfeminisms groups.io, something like that, and then you can email and join that.
Amazing.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We've been talking with Annie Goh, artist in residence at Studio XX currently, and co-founder of the Sonic Cyberfeminisms Project. It's such a pleasure to have you here. Speaking of Sonic Cyberfeminisms and noise, XX Files is putting on a noise performance as a part of a CKUT benefit. Tomorrow. CASA, we'll be performing alongside our radio slot neighbor, Stefan Christoph, and a whole bunch of other amazing experimental artists and musicians. So, please come out.
Say hello.
Say hello, support CKUT.
Yep. We're looking forward to it.
It's, yeah, we're going to make some noise. It's going to be cool.
It's going to be noisy.
And check out Annie at Noise Sunday at La Plante on the last Sunday of the month.
I'll be there.
Cool.
Yeah,
for sure.
Actually, no, I'll be out of town. But okay. maybe I'll get back in time.
Thank you so much again for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Julie and Amanda.
Cool. This has been XX Files on CKUT at 90.3 FM. Have a good afternoon.
This is CKUT. It's If You Got Ears from 12 to 2. We have a special guest live in the studio tonight, all the way from Vancouver, Big Zen. He's going to be playing some music for us. I wonder what it's going to sound like. It's a bit of a drizzly day out there today.